Greetings and welcome to Philosophy of Religion. Philosophy may be for some of you a word that sounds pretty daunting, but I assure you that although the issues that we deal with are profound, you'll be able to get a good grasp of them fairly easily. I've been doing this for a long time, and mostly I taught freshmen. And as everybody knows, the difference between a high school senior and a college freshman is a few weeks at the beach. If college freshmen can get this, you can. It's also something that's very important. People need to reflect on their faith. People who already are Christian and want to become Christian leaders need to reflect on what you might call the credentials of the faith. How do we know God is real? And that will be the main subject of this course. It will be different from most philosophy of religion courses as they are taught in North America. Most of them concentrate almost solely on the proofs of God's existence, the arguments that have as a conclusion God exists, or it's more probable that God exists and then God doesn't, that kind of thing. We will look at some of those proofs so that you will know how they go, and I will show you, I think, why they don't work. I don't think any of the proofs for God's existence work, and that it doesn't make any difference at all, because that's not how anybody knows God. God's reality is not a hypothesis. It's not a guess we make to fill an explanatory gap. It's not like a theory in physics or in psychology or any other field. God's reality is an experience report. People believe in God because they experience God, because they know and walk and live with God. And what we need to parse this out and show how that works and why the proofs are unnecessary, and so on. And for people who don't already profess Christian faith, this is also important. If you're willing to give belief in God a fair shake, then at least listen to what the real grounds for that belief turn out to be. I think you may be surprised, and it may actually be fun. Of course, that's a relative term, isn't it? So people have fun in a lot of different ways. And philosophy, people in philosophy, philosophers are famous for finding fun to be discussing some abstruse topic. But this isn't going to be abstruse. This is going to be very concrete and real. It has to do with whether God's real or not. And there's probably nothing more important than that. So, why don't we begin? Let's begin by talking about what philosophy is. And then we'll look at what a religious belief is in order to ask what's the relation between these two things. I remember this was put very vividly. My first day in graduate school, I'm walking down the hall and I see my name, Clauser, over a door. I thought it was very curious. I don't run into that name often. So I went over and opened the door and peeked in, and there's a fellow sitting in there with his feet up on the desk reading the newspaper. And he says, "This is private office." I said, "Oh, excuse me. I saw my name over the door and wondered what was going on." He said, "Oh, that's your name too? Come in. Have a cup of coffee. Sit down. Tell me why you came to graduate school here." And so I said, "Well, I'm interested in the philosophy of religion." And he said, "Here at Harvard, we teach philosophy and we teach religion. It's up to you if you see any connection." So let's start with what philosophy is, what a religious belief is, and the connection that I see, which I think is extremely important and very clear. Start with philosophy. When I used to introduce this to my freshman students, I always did something like this. I said, "We have all kinds of sciences. We have mathematics, and we have physics, and we have biology. We have psychology. We have logic, and we have linguistics. And great many more fields. Economics, law, ethics. Each one of these is a study. There are experts in it who get degrees in it, who offer courses in it. So what's left for philosophy to study? If these represent the home ground, the topic, the field, subject matter of these disciplines. What's the subject matter for philosophy? And usually, my freshman students puzzled over that one. But eventually, almost always, somebody came up with a suggestion. Is philosophy about how they all relate? And I would say, you get the gold star. Exactly. One well-known American philosopher put it this way, and I like this quote, now I'll repeat it later on in the course. Philosophy is about how all things, in the widest sense of things, hang together in the widest sense of hang together. So it's about how all these disciplines hang together. How do they all relate? Another way to put this is to think of this, of these disciplines, and why don't I write some more of them up here so you see what I'm talking about. I'm talking about sociology and economics and aesthetics and ethics, and finally there's theology. What do you mean, how do they all hang together? Well, one very old way of looking at all of this goes like this. It views all these as though they are the beads on a necklace. And philosophy wants to know, what is the string? What hangs them all together? And the oldest positions taken in philosophy all use the same kind of answer. They all selected some one or two of these beads and said, these aren't beads at all, these are the string. So a materialist in philosophy, for example, is someone who believes that the physical is what gives rise to everything else. There are some kind of realities that are purely physical, and they generate everything else that exists, physical or not. So the physical is not just a bead on the string, it's the string. It's what hangs all the rest together because it generates, it produces all the rest. As many as they'll concede exist. That's one way to do it. It's a way most theories have been done, and it's a way that I'm later going to say is not a good idea for reasons that I think are very powerful and very important. This is one side of philosophy. There are two sorts of theories that deal with how all the disciplines hang together. And one is a theory of reality and a general theory. Whoops. Try that. Maybe I need another. Try another pen here. General theory of reality. In other words, we're thinking of this as these are all different sides of the reality that we experience. Reality as we experience has things in it that are just physical, things that are alive. It has in it sensations and emotions. It has logical thought and so on. But a general theory says these are all specific sides to the reality that we experience. We want to know the general, the what hangs it all together, what's true of them all. What are they all sides of? And there's another way that this yields a general theory. And that's a general theory of knowledge. I hope you can read my handwriting. I've been told it's pretty bad. In fact, I've been told if it was just a little worse, I could have qualified as an MD. You know what that stands for, don't you? Mucho dinero. Anyway, general theory of knowledge says these are not only different sides to reality, they're different kinds of knowledge. There's mathematical knowledge, knowledge in physics, in biology, psychology, logic, linguistics, sociology, and so on. But how would we characterize knowledge itself, of which these are all different types. So again, it's the what hangs it all together. Now, in this course, we're not going to undertake just to do this or just to do this. This course is a little more specific. It's about whether we can know God is real. So it's about theory of reality, but it's not about the whole, taken as a whole, but with specific reference to God. Is God real? And it's going to concentrate on this side of things, the theory of knowledge, because it's going to ask, how can we know? And of course, one answer is we can't. One very popular answer is nobody can really know that kind of thing. That's just too abstract. It's an idea people came up with, and we have no way of telling whether any of those religious ideas are right, and including whether God's real. It won't surprise you to hear that I'm going to disagree with that very strongly. What we want to do here is first we see the nature of the study, what philosophy is about, how it approaches things, how it looks for what lies underneath the surface. And we're going to do this with respect to God, and then we're going to do it with respect to whether God's real, and do it with respect to how we can know. So in the connection with the second one, how we know, we're going to talk about what a religious belief is. What a religious belief is. And it's probably not the way you've ever phrased this to yourself, but before we try to talk about philosophy concerning religious beliefs, the belief in God in particular, we ought to be able to identify a religious belief when we see one. How would you know, when you look at any particular belief, whether it's religious or not? For example, suppose we take sample belief. Next Friday's payday. Here's another. There was an ice age about 13,000 years ago. Here's another. Last winter was unusually warm. And here's another. 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 equals 10. Any of those sound like religious beliefs to you? Probably not. But one of them was definitely a religious belief to a very important group of thinkers in the ancient world. I'm talking about Pythagoras and his followers. Do you remember that from geometry class? The Pythagorean theorem? For Pythagoras and his followers, the statement that's religious is 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 makes 10. Excuse me while I erase the board here. We need more room, so. As you can see, we have all the best, latest equipment. Now, why did the Pythagoreans think that a statement like 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 equals 10 had to do with anything to do with religion? Well, it's because they believed that the most fundamental reality, you ready for this? The most fundamental reality was numbers. Everything is really made of numbers. Something like the way you and I think of atoms as constituting physical things, they thought numbers were what made everything, constituted everything. Everything is some combination of numbers. And they had a figure, a geometric figure, that they called tetractes. Funny name, but it was looked like this. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, any way you look at it, and it comes out to 10. And here's something you probably weren't told in math class. They not only believed that everything were numbers, but they believed that that made numbers divine. And they worshipped them. They actually prayed to them. Here's their prayer to the number 10, to this tetractes, this figure. Bless us, divine number, thou that generates gods and men. Holy, holy Tetraktes, thou that containest the root and source of eternally flowing creation. For divine number begins with the profound, the pure unity. That's the number one. Until it comes to the holy four, and then it begets the mother of all, the all-encompassing, the all-bounding, the firstborn, the never-swerving, never-tiring, holy ten, the keyholder of all. Now, if that isn't weird enough, we have to reflect on the fact that you and I believe that 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 equals 10 also, but for us it's not a religious belief. So the question is, what makes it religious for them and not for us? And why is it that that is religious for them, but not last winter was unusually warm and next Friday will be payday? What is it that makes a religious belief? And when we return, we'll take a little break and you think about this stuff, digest it, tidy up your notes, maybe rerun it. And we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll talk about kinds of definitions and how we're going to try to go about defining religious belief.